Thanks very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here, 10 minutes after 12 on this Tuesday afternoon. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. On Tuesdays, we start with Wall Street. John Najarian is on the phone line. Actually, Michael, I got a problem here with my phone system. I can't. Can you bring up John for me? All right, John Najarian, you on with the phone with us?
I am indeed, Stephen. Can you hear me okay?
I can. All of a sudden, I looked at my phone console, and there are a bunch of pictures there that I do not recognize. So I knew that was going to be a problem. How are you, John?
I've had to use that excuse when those pictures have popped up on my screen, too, Stephen.
Thank God Michael Heidemann's in the booth, because I would have been lost there. Well, so I'm looking at Wall Street, and obviously after a day with terrible news as we had in Brussels, you expect somehow for there to be a reflection on Wall Street, but all the indices are in positive territory, not by much, but they're all in the green today.
Yeah, and very significant turns in the overseas market, Stephen. Germany was down to beneath 9,900 today. It reversed 230 points
wow.
on a 10,000 point index. That's a pretty big move. So it finished positive on the day. Most of European stocks were, of course, hit on the attacks in Brussels as that news broke. But most of them, not all, not Italy and not Spain, but many of the rest, recovered and finished in the green, which was pretty amazing.
Why do you think that is?
Well, in the past, these events, these terror events, because we have, unfortunately, a slew of them, several in Ankara, Turkey lately, and that's less impactful to the West, but obviously the big one was Paris, November 13th, and that basically created a number of stocks that people chased into, like defense stocks, for instance, Northrop, General Dynamics, Lockheed Martin, Raytheon, and Boeing, the likes of those, all had very quick upside moves, and they died out very quickly. They were up about 4% over the next 30 days. What we looked at, Stephen, were, well, what else was an outperformer during that time? And the same sort of thing that played out today. TripAdvisor, Priceline, American Airlines, Delta Airlines, the leisure space that people worry about immediately when something like this happens, what if people don't want to travel and so forth, those became some of the best performers over the next 30 days. So those are the exact names that I was buying a little on this dip in those names today, even though, as you say, the broader market is higher already.
Well, that's interesting. So I was going to ask you about that, whether they're, because it seems to be, you know, you're the expert, and I don't know much about the stock market, but it strikes me sometimes that there's an immaturity, you know, that there's an overreaction to the day's news rather than looking at the long picture. I suppose it depends on how you're or why you're investing, but, you know, like an immaturity, a quick reaction to dump American Airlines or other stocks like that today. But you're saying those are probably bargains or things to buy.
Yes, I believe so, especially with if crude oil has stabilized rather than running away like it had been for the previous seven sessions almost in a row, where it just was going up a dollar every day. It seems to have hit a bit of a wall right around the $41 level. If that holds, then I think that huge input cost to the airlines and to cruise lines and shippers of all sorts will continue to be a benefit to them, because it's still so much less than they've budgeted for to have crude oil or diesel or Jet A available at these prices. And I think that means that many of those, unless we stop flying or reduce travel dramatically, unless they stop shipping things or we stop buying on Amazon dramatically, I think many of these same companies that are hit a little hard today will be the same ones that outperform over the next 30 days.
How is Apple doing today? I mean, they unveiled a couple of products yesterday, but also it seems as if there's not a resolution, at least there's a bit of a truce in their standoff with the federal government over privacy.
Yeah, and it seems, I'm not going to say I told you so, certainly.
You can say it. You tell me all the time.
But I am going to say that from friends of mine who are in pretty high positions of authority in the National Security Agency, or no such agency, NSA, they tell me that they've had the ability to get into these phones forever. Whether or not that's bluster on their part or whether it's true, I always questioned the FBI and wanting a backdoor, a permanent access, if you will, for basically warrantless searches. Apple was completely against that, and I think they were smart to be against it. I do think ultimately they will get the data that they want off of this phone, but they didn't need to make it as much a fight over whether or not Apple was patriotic and basically helping find terrorist wrongdoers in the future as they were trying to protect Americans from some of the security breaches. But nonetheless, as you say, Apple came out with a new product yesterday. They reduced the price of the watch. Their new iPad looks pretty slick. The phone will be something. The new smaller phone will be something that people that don't want a big phone in their pocket and that don't need that constant connection to the Internet via a larger format phone, I think they will like that, and those will be people in emerging markets in particular. So I think Apple did itself a favor, but nothing that's going to be anything compared to the iPhone 7 launch in September, Stephen.
You know, the big story today was supposed to be President Obama in Cuba, and I know he's there with business leaders, and I know there's already some, is it Starwood that's already taking over some hotels there? But as you watch on Wall Street, what does this opening to Cuba mean for American businesses? I know the embargo is still in place, but things I would think are going to ease up.
And I believe they will, too, but very little in the short term. It is 11 million people. Unfortunately, it's 11 million fairly poor people. This perhaps will help them break out of that poverty. But these are not folks that are going to go out and buy a $4 latte at Starbucks. Those will be tourists.
So they're smart. The Cubans are smart people.
Yes, but if Starbucks goes in Cuba, for instance, even if they were able to saturate the island, as Starbucks tends to do with their franchises, the locals won't be buying it because they can't afford it. This will be a luxury that tourists visiting Cuba perhaps could drink, but it shouldn't move the needle for very many stocks, including Starwood, but it's a positive step. It's another neighbor that hopefully becomes a friendly neighbor to the United States, and that would mean, I guess, more commerce. But it's relatively small in terms of, you know, we have cities in the United States that are bigger than the entire population of Cuba.
John Najarian, I want to talk maybe next week, too. I'm fascinated by the Brexit, the vote in England, and what that might mean for us. But listen, thanks very much for joining us today. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Stephen. Take
John
care.
Najarian. You can follow him on Twitter at John Najarian. /12:22 You're listening to the Business Lunch here on 720 WGN. I'm Steve Bertrand, and thanks very much for listening. Hope you'll follow me on Facebook or on Twitter. Steve Bertrand on Facebook, the same on Twitter. By the way, Suzanne Mushin will be here a little bit later. We're talking about this. It's gender pay again, right? An old topic, but kind of a new twist on it, a study that Suzanne found. And it's told via video with kids. You can see that on my Facebook page now at Steve Bertrand if you want to do your work ahead a little bit. But only do it if you can also listen to Andrew Herman from DNA Info Chicago, who's in the studio. Andrew, welcome.
Hi, Steve.
Andrew comes by week to week to talk about new businesses, openings, and closings. And we're going to start with the Halal guys.
Right. So this is a very interesting story. So they are opening their second location in Chicago this summer. It's going to be at 180 North Wabash. Last year they opened one in the Gold Coast at 49 West Division, and it's basically Mediterranean food, rice, chicken, falafels, that kind of thing.
And it started with the idea that they wanted to feed the cabbies?
Right. So it started in New York, where Halal Guys is a really big thing, but it was in 1990 a guy bought a hot dog cart that you see all over New York, and you know there's a million of them, and he said, well, what can I serve that sort of sets me apart from the rest of the carts here, and realized there were a lot of Muslim cab drivers, and they eat halal, which is sort of a religiously prescribed way of making food, and it became huge, and not only Muslims were eating stuff from the Halal Guys, but all kinds of people were doing it. And if you go to New York even today, you'll see these carts, these Halal Guy carts on the street in New York, and there's usually a pretty long line of people trying to buy the stuff. Now, they decided a few years ago, well, let's start opening some restaurants. Let's see if we can franchise this out, and they have a goal of having a couple hundred franchises across the country in the next few years, and we have a couple of them now in Chicago.
So there's one in the Gold Coast, right? And this next one's going to open up in the Loop, 180 North Wabash.
Mm-hmm.
Next to a coffee house, a dessert place, sort of a combo, halal and coffee.
Right. The franchisee has got a couple of irons in the fire, I guess you could say, and that's how he's going to try and do it. But, you know, even beyond Halal Guys, we've seen this sort of mini explosion of Mediterranean food downtown, even. Naf Naf Grill is right down the street.
It's, you know, I don't think I've been yet. It's right across from your office, right?
Right, right. It's at, what would that be, Michigan and Wacker.
So many people said, have you been to, is it where the old Chinese restaurant was? The carryout?
I'm not sure what used to be there, but I go there myself occasionally, and it's very good.
You come over here lunchtime most Tuesdays, so I'm not telling you what to do.
You know, I often come here and talk about food, but I never actually bring any.
No one's noticed that but you, Andrew. Okay, Kent, let's go to what would you call this, the DePaul neighborhood?
Yeah, Lakeview. I would call it Lakeview.
I would call it the land of disposable income, apparently. Camp Wiggles.
Right, and this is another case, kind of like the previous one, in which somebody doesn't come up with a new idea, but just takes a current idea and refines it and changes it a little bit. And in this case, the owner, Julie List, she was a psychologist. She got tired of being that, and, you know, it's one of these things where she says, well, you know, what do I really like to do?
Well, I like her story. It's a sad one, but her longtime dog died.
Yeah.
And she realized, I need to pursue something that's going to make me happy.
So she decides, well, I like to spend time with dogs. You know, doggy daycare is sort of a big thing, and I thought this was kind of a smart move for anybody who's considering opening a small business, and that's, she plotted where are all the doggy daycare places in the city,
right,
and then looked at the map and figured out, okay, here's an area that doesn't seem to be saturated, and she found one there in Lakeview. And so basically, it's if you don't want to leave your dog home alone all day, you drop it off. It's a little like school, I guess, for your dogs. And they go there and play, and then you pick them up. But her refinement of the idea is what to do with your dog when you go on vacation.
Right.
Which, if you have a dog, you're always faced with this. You know, what do you do with the dog? And if you really like the dog, like I like my dog, you're on vacation.
I got to tell you, Andrew, we have friends who, and we're running out of time, unfortunately, but I have friends who are in Europe right now for 2 weeks,
uh-huh,
and we hid for about 10 days so they wouldn't ask us to watch their dog.
Well, this place has a sleep-at-home camp, and basically what they do is when you're on vacation, they go to your house, they pick up your dog, they take care of it all day, then they bring it back to your house at night so it can sleep overnight.
So they walk the dog late at night, and then the dog's sleeping in his or her own bed?
Right. I mean, they take it so it can play with other dogs during the daytime, and then but at night it has a comfortable, familiar place. And,
so it's a day camp for dogs.
Right. And you know, people love their dogs.
What's to set you back here, buddy?
Well, it would be $55 to $60 a day for the camp where they where when you're on vacation,
right,
instead of a kennel. The other one is $22 a day if you have the monthly package. But people love their dogs. There's a lot of money to be made in dogs.
Do you know what it
I know, because I spend a lot of money on my
dog. Do you know what it costs to just have a dog walker every day? I mean, $22 a day to drop off, which is fine, but that's based on a monthly, so people are doing that every day.
Yeah, I'm completely unfamiliar. As I was telling you before we got on the air, my dog has been trained to hold it all day until we get home.
Smart dog. All right, that is Camp Wiggles up in a little further north than I thought, Addison and Halsted.
Yeah.
Andrew Herman, thanks for coming by. We'll talk to you again next week.
Okay, thanks.
You're listening to The Business Lunch here on 720 WGN. Thanks very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch. It is 12:38 here on Tuesday afternoon. That's about the time Suzanne Mushin comes in.
I'm not enjoying the laughter
she's here
as you're introducing me.
Suzanne is the co-host of The Big Payoff on WGN+.
There's a lot of dread in that laughter.
I'm beginning to think I'm like a climate change denier, okay? Because you come in here every week after week, and I often feel beaten down when you leave. And
I feel bad about that, but not so bad.
You do a little victory dance when you leave the studio.
A little bit.
Okay, when it comes to pay equity, I have been a denier in many ways because I think there are so many factors. I think it's oversimplified sometimes. Maybe it's because it's unimaginable to me that, you know, if you're doing my job, that you're not going to get the same or more. I don't understand how someone could consciously
are
do
you,
that.
Are you denying the existence of the gap or the causes of the gap?
The causes of the gap.
You're questioning the causes.
I'm not even questioning. I'm just saying that there are women have so many different situations in the workplace, coming in and out, the flexibility. They're different than men, and so maybe that helps explain some of it.
It's pretty well documented. Oh, and look, you and I, before I got in, said, look, if I did your job...
Right. They'd save money.
Because I do it for free.
No.
That's not quite the situation. But let's just actually talk about this new study that came out from Cornell. Because...
Okay, before we do, I want to find one statistic from the story.
Yep.
Because differences in type of work for men and women do account for 51% of the pay gap. So they're saying that the jobs that men do the type for, so that's part of it. The pay gap isn't all evil.
No.
And I guess that's my point.
No. Okay, I want to just start there. The pay gap isn't necessarily intentional and malintended on every employer's part. What's happening now is the transparency has exposed something that I think was there and not enough people were paying attention to it.
Okay, let's talk about what was exposed because it's pretty amazing.
So this is what's been exposed by this study at Cornell, who said, it's not just that the pay gap exists. It's that as women enter fields and you're already scowling.
I'm not scowling.
I feel like you're scowling.
No, I'm feeling shame. No,
oh, you should feel ashamed. So as women enter fields that were predominantly male, the entire pay scale drops. So it would be as if let's say WGN has a bunch of men on the radio and behind the scenes, and then all of a sudden more women start hosting shows and producing and engineering them, the pay would go down for that job.
So the men,
the entire job.
Let's say they played the flute. So people who played the flute.
Right.
And it was a predominantly male
Correct.
Job.
And
they would get this, once more women come in.
The whole category of flautists would drop in pay, and
worse. Which is so unfair to the men who play the flute.
Okay, you didn't go there, did you really? That's what you should be ashamed of.
Okay, but so maybe it's explained that way, though, because if there is that gap, I think the article is saying then that the profession is less valued.
That's the perception. Exactly. Here's the problem. You just got to the crux of what's painful about this study. That means that perception is that when women do a job, it becomes less valuable.
Less valuable, right.
Ouch.
Yeah, that's what it looks like.
And so I did want to say that in response to some of this and to the deniers, a video was posted by this group in Australia that, first of all, so many of the children in it should run for president given our current situation right now. I would vote for half of the
Way
kids in this video.
Way too wise, I think.
Oh, my God. Wise for the year. So basically what the video did is
Can I say it's on my Facebook page at Steve Bertrand so people can see it there.
You can see it there. So I'll just set it up by saying they took kids and they had them do tasks around the house or around the yard, a boy and a girl, and then at the end, when the tasks were done, they paid the boys more than the girls.
Michael's got a little piece of it. You want to play it, Mike?
Why does he get $5?
That's just the way it is.
To me, it's flat out illegal. Like, I'm not joking. I'm not being unreasonable.
Women and men should have the same money. They should have 50-50. 60-60 if you want to do 120.
Maybe if the men noticed they were being paid more than the women, they should speak up about it.
When I am older, I'm going to make a change. If I don't forget.
If he doesn't forget. Honestly, I want to vote for him right now. I'm so in love with him.
50-50 or 60-60?
I like that when he got to the 60-60, he recovered by realizing that was more than 100%. Yeah. But the video really illuminates this issue. And I actually like the older girl in the video says something very important. She says, I think if men were more aware of this, they would do something about it. And studies like this do make us more aware. And now the question is, will employers do anything about
it? We'll see, because like I said, it was a good one for me, I think.
Yeah.
Because I like the fact that they took that there was a hybrid. It's not all one thing.
Not all one thing.
Okay. Let's talk about Shark Tank's Barbara Corcoran.
So this is just an interesting, quick case study. We know that the Shark Tank investors, Kevin O'Leary, has been very vocal about the fact that women CEOs that he's invested in on the show are outperforming the guys. Okay, he's been very vocal. Of the 27 investments he says he's made, the only ones making money are female-led companies.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But this one's unusual. It's unusual for a lot of reasons. So Barbara invests $50,000 to get 25% of an organic deodorant company. Okay. Sounds like, and also, let's just note that it came in a tube. It came in like a jar. It wasn't even a stick.
So not even an easy application.
Easy application. After the show, within 3 months, they go from having sold $110,000 worth of this product over, I think it was 18 months, to selling $2 million worth of product, and it's now sustaining.
Okay, what's that about?
1,000% return. So part of this is the power of Shark Tank, right? Being on that show is a huge bump for some of these entrepreneurs. But the other thing that the article said, and that a lot of the investors are saying too, not just on Shark Tank, is women entrepreneurs are actually less risk tolerant, which means they're not just hurling themselves at opportunities. They're being a little bit more thoughtful, a little bit more strategic, and as a result, they're getting bigger wins.
But 1,000%?
1,000% return.
For
now.
Deodorant in a tube?
Deodorant in, it's worse than that. It's not a stick. Now, Barbara is forcing them to make a stick.
Right.
Thank God. Would you use deodorant in a tub?
In the tub?
No, it's like a tub, of lotion or something.
Oh, no. Would
me
not
neither.
Do. No, can
Piper
do.
Y, it's called. So good for them.
Suzanne also brought in a story about how women use more of their brains than men, but we're out of time.
Oh, Steve, you didn't do that.
Had I been smarter, I would have allocated our time a little bit better. Maybe next week.
Maybe next week.
Suzanne Muchin, thanks for coming in. Co-host of the Big Payoff. You can listen to that at WGN Plus, and you should. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN. Steve Bertrand. Hope you'll follow me on Twitter at Steve Bertrand or on Facebook too, page at Steve Bertrand, or there's Steve Bertrand on Books. By the way, we're going to put up a new Steve Bertrand on Books interview coming up later this week. So look for that. Chris Pavone is the name of the author I talked to. He wrote a book called The Travelers, which is a pretty cool spy novel. That's not what we're talking about now, though. Roger Chavez is on the phone line. He's the operations manager for Favor. Roger, welcome to the program.
No, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
So how many times do you hear someone say, hey, do me a favor. Would you do me a favor? How about doing me a favor?
I probably hear it more than I realize, but it's a fun little pun that we like to throw around.
All right, so this is a company. It's an app, I guess, started out of are you guys based out of Austin, Roger?
Well, we're based out of Austin, Texas.
But you started in California?
The story goes, we started in California. The two founders, Ben and Zach, they were out in California in San Luis Obispo, but Austin is where we call it home.
And the idea is with this Favor that you use the app to basically call a delivery guy or gal, and they'll go to just about any store, any restaurant you want, pick up what you want, and then for $5, bring it to your place all within 45 minutes. How's that for a description?
It's pretty accurate. The delivery fee is actually $6. But literally you have a personal on-demand delivery assistant at the top of a button. And it's interesting. People like to use it for convenience. Think about those times when you get back to your house and maybe you're hungry, nothing in the kitchen. You can open up the app, or even better, maybe you get home and you realize that, Fido was out of dog food, and you really don't feel like running back out to the pet store to snag a bag of dog food, you can open the Favor app, and we'll be more than happy to run out and grab that for you.
Now, I know this started in college for these guys, and it expanded sort of to college towns, and I'm not sure I get that, because I'm thinking that the college age, the students wouldn't have the income or would just go out and get it themselves rather than drop the $6 on having a Big Mac delivered. Why does it work at college towns?
I don't know about you, but if you think back to when maybe you were in college, I know for myself, when I was in school, I lived off my parents' nickel and dime, and they probably would not have been happy with
Roger,
me.
There was a nickel and it was a dime.
That's a good point. But I definitely see what you're saying, but you'd be surprised, if you think about it, college students, they go out on the town and they get home, maybe from a night of drinking. It's safer for them not to actually leave their apartment or their dorm and let somebody else go pick up those late night munchies. But yes, we do tend to build it around college towns, and you'd be surprised. College students, they do tend to have some disposable income. and they do like modern convenience, and that's one thing we do like about them.
So here you are in Chicago now. How long have you been in Chicago?
We launched in Chicago on February 29th, so we will be celebrating our one-year anniversary in 4 years.
And, no, wait a minute. Do that again. Oh, I got you. Very nice.
Yeah.
I'm slow, but not completely slow. Okay. And so how's it going here?
So far, so good. Things are going well. I wish we could expand our zone sooner. I do get a lot of emails from customers asking us to expand it because currently we do have a smaller delivery area, but we do that mainly to we like to wow our customers. We're really big on setting ourselves up for success and giving the service that our customers expect to us from us. And one way that we know that we can do that is by being prompt with our deliveries. And so as we add to our runner team and the team grows, we will actually start to expand the zone and cover more of the Chicago area.
Where's the zone right now, Roger?
So we go north to Diversey, and then east to the waterway, and then south to Congress, and then our western boundary is the river.
And you'll pick up anything, anywhere?
Everything except alcohol.
Oh, really? Because that would be licensing probably, or just more trouble than it's worth?
More trouble than it's worth. It's just, you know, there's other services that do that, and we'd be more than happy to recommend a few of them because some of them are good friends of ours, and it's just something that we'd rather not get into right now.
And so you get your money, $6 for the delivery, and I would imagine some of the restaurants are paying you or the businesses are paying you as well, right?
Correct. We do have merchant partners in various cities and markets, but at the same time, we look at ourselves more as being a personal assistant to where, like, although they might not be a merchant, if there's a certain place that you really enjoy or a store that you really love to shop at and you just don't have the time to run out and grab it, we'll go do that for you.
The app is called... Go ahead.
Actually, we'll literally deliver anything.
the app is called Favor. Roger Chavez is the operations manager. Roger, thanks. Welcome to Chicago, and I look forward to that one-year anniversary celebration coming up in 4 years.
I'll invite you.
Thanks very much for talking. I appreciate it.
Have a good one.
Bye-bye. You're listening to the Business Lunch here on 720 WGN.